one phrase that we use a lot is be chalant. Every single good thing in my life is a result of, at least in the beginning, commitment, kind of intensity. It's not organic. It doesn't feel natural, but you show up and you put your butt in the seat.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Let's Be Real podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Eunice, and I believe we need all the help we can get when it comes to living a full and free life. Here you'll find honest truth, practical tips, and perspective changes that help you embrace the miracle that is your life. It's an in-process conversation that's going to be unfiltered, and it better be fun. Let's get real together. Hey, everyone. Welcome to today's episode of the Let's Be Real podcast. I am so excited for you to meet our guest for today. We just finished our conversation and it was incredible. If you are feeling like you are not sure about your purpose, if you are wondering how to get reconnected into community and into life, you are going to want to learn from our guest. We have Liz Bohannon on the show. She is the founder of Seiko Designs. She is a podcaster. She's an author. She's a wild chick. So you guys are going to really like her. And this is just a conversation that we both have about kind of where we find ourselves in life, what she's learning in year 12 of leading Seiko Designs, and kind of what's next for her and in her personal life. So excited for you guys to meet her. You can follow her on Instagram. You can find her website. And of course, Seiko Designs. We've dropped all of that for you in the show notes. But without further ado, here's my conversation with Liz. Liz, thank you so much for being on Let's Be Real. This is so exciting. I have like been waiting for this conversation for a long time, and I'm really excited for all of our viewers and listeners to get to know you a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, Liz Bohannon, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh my gosh, Liz, what were you doing right before this interview and what will you be doing right after?
Wow. Right before I was in a meeting with my team. I am in Costa Rica for a month with my family. For a month. We just got here. I've got three little boys under the age of five.
Yes.
And so I'm working remotely. So what was I doing before? I was sitting here in what looks like a really kind of, I think it looks like a cool, classy Zoom backdrop. I feel really good at it. I've got some window light happening. This is video, so I should be careful of what I show, but I'm actually in a bathroom. So here we go. And I was in a meeting with my team at Seiko Designs. We are actually in the midst of, it's a fun time in business. We are piloting out something that I'm actually not even going to say out loud. We are in a top secret pilot phase of a really significant initiative that we're undertaking in our company. And so every week we have a sync about this project to get our whole team, ops, sales, marketing, customer service, everybody kind of aligned on a weekly basis as we build this plane, as we fly it. So I was in that meeting right before this call.
And tell me, like, a meeting like that. And by the way, everyone just go follow Seiko. It's two S's. Because Liz just told me, 21-year-old Liz named it. So it's two S's. And literally the purse, I'm going to order the purse as soon as we get off of this call. Because the purse that I just saw on Instagram, I was like, I need to buy that. And I need to buy that for a few people. So Seiko, you guys, is Liz's company. So you can go follow so we can find out about
S-S-E-K-O.
S-S-E-K-O. And we'll like even put it down here in the show notes for you so it's easy to find. But I love when people are dropping top secret information on us. But I want to ask you as the leader, when you think about, I mean, this is a big question, but Seiko started, how many years has it been?
It's been probably 11, 12 years.
Okay.
Kind of, you so when you down a little bit after 10, and then you start going to the like every 5-year milestones, I feel like.
That's right. You're like, how many months is 12 years?
Yeah.
That many months old. When you think about this different stages of leadership that you've been through in these last 12 years, what are sort of the pros and cons for you at the stage that you're at?
Oh, that's good. The stage that we're at. Pros, I am officially surrounded by folks who are smarter than me.
Nice.
You know, in the beginning, and I'm speaking from my kind of entrepreneurial journey, so it may be different for different folks, but you know, in the very beginning, when you're like super, super scrappy, you are hiring pretty cheap, low, you know, entry low, anybody who will just say yes to your crazy idea. You know, we couldn't for the life of us ever. I mean, back in, I'm a, you know, 22-year-old trying to start a manufacturing company in Uganda with 19-year-old women. So needless to say, funding opportunities were not.
The pockets were not deep. At us.
So it wasn't like we were a venture-backed, you know, initiative and I had all this, you know, money to go out and to hire people. And so for many, many years, it was hiring people that didn't. And I don't say this disparagingly. I say because they were beginners and I was a beginner. You are. Yep. Everybody is learning as you go. There's not a lot of skills, not a lot of experience, a lot of pluck and a lot of grit. And I am eternally grateful for those folks because at the end of the day, like they came into the story and played the role that they needed to play to get, you know, to get us to the next level. But it's also really hard. It's hard. It's a hard stage of leadership. Now I'm in a stage where I'd say the best part is like, I get to work with really smart people. Like I just made my business partner's awesome. My team is awesome. I just made an awesome hire last week that I'm super stoked about. And I'm kind of in now the more like pinch me. I'm like, I'm working alongside people who are further on in their careers, really juicy, awesome, amazing experience that then they're bringing to this thing.
Yeah.
Being Seiko. And it's really humbling and cool to be like, I'm definitely not the smartest person in the room. I feel great about that.
Yeah. And what's a con for you on this, at this stage? Like what's something that you miss or something that is different? Maybe we won't call it a con, but something that's different.
You know, I'm a starter. It's honestly why like this meeting that I just got out of that I told you about, where it's like, we have our kind of like core established business. And then we have this like big dream initiative that really is just in kind of this pilot phase is actually giving me so much life because we are, as I said, building the plane as we fly it, but we still have kind of, we've got the big plane that's like going on the standard like flight path. And that's not my sweet spot as I'm a starter. I'm a creator. I love, I just love the moment when there's nothing and it becomes in the spark of when it becomes something getting everybody on board and kind of casting the vision for it in this scrappy stage where you're just like, you know, figuring it out, you're testing. I mean, what's so fun about this stage that we're in right now with this little kind of, you know, project that we have going on is it's just like I said, every week we're like, do the test, come back, get the data. What are people saying? What's the feedback? How do we do it? Let's change this. Let's go out. Let's test it again. And so I actually I'm getting that right now through this project, but generally where we are as a state of a company, it's not necessarily, I feel even where it's like where I get my most natural like amount of energy is in kind of the like scaling and growing and getting systems and processes. Those like very early days of Seiko where it was so scrappy and hard. And as I mentioned, we didn't have a team, we didn't have talent, but like, man, when it was just like me. And I tend to be, I'm like obsessed. I'm so obsessed. If, you know, we've been in each other's orbit. So you probably have picked this up about me. I love community and I'm so in my personal life with our company. There's a real part of me that kind of has a little bit of a lone ranger kind of thing. So for me, those very early days when it was just like little baby Liz off gallivanting through East Africa, coming up with bananas ideas, you know, just like tinkering in the middle of the night, like, and it, no one else was impacted by it. In some ways, you know, you grow and the pressure of leadership only gets greater. And so the hope is that you just, as the pressure gets greater, your rootedness, your toolkit for dealing with that pressure, your boundaries also grow at a similar pace. I think healthy leadership is. And that's what I shoot for. But admittedly, there have definitely been times where it's like the pressure has outpaced my toolkit for dealing with it. And just your podcast is called Let's Be Real. So let's be real. It's hard. There's a lot of weight that leaders carry. A lot. Yeah. And you're managing your own weight and anxiety, and then you are managing the weight and anxiety of an entire organization. And the bigger it gets, the bigger your problems are, the more people that are looking to you for answers, and the more like pressure you feel, and the more tempting it is to tip into a place of unhealth, which frankly I've been in for sure in different seasons.
Yeah. Tell us about a time, like what you just said about, I love that analogy. So I just want to like capture it for everyone, because I do feel like my experience of the cultural vibe right now with the people that I'm with, the leaders that I'm around, is they are experiencing, like on the meta, the pressure has outstripped the rootedness. Like if we talk about roots getting deeper so that there can be more withstanding of a force, it's like the roots aren't deep enough. But there's that experience we're all having. But also I think at the end of the day, a leader's like, well, what am I going to do about it? So can you tell us about a time that you experienced that unbalance in your own life and what brought you through it, to it, out of it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I honestly, unfortunately, don't feel like I can even speak about it in such defined, like, here was a season where mm-hmm. I was really out of whack and then I came back into health. I honestly think for me, it's more like freckled. Where it's like, I'm doing good. And then all of a sudden something will happen that it just, and I mean, if I'm being totally honest, last week,
you're like, 8 a.m. this morning. That's how I am.
Like I had a moment last week where I really, I was just like, you know, I think the question that I was asking is like, I feel like I can be and have over the course, especially of the last 2 years, there have just been for every leader, for every human, just immense challenges and the pressure and weight of trying to keep things afloat and make sure everybody like keeps their jobs. And not only they keep their job, but they love their job and they feel fulfilled and they feel, you know, like they're growing and that, you know, the health insurance is paid, all of these things. And just kind of like all of a sudden having this moment of like, no one's looking out for me. Like, just the sense that it's like no one's thinking about me like I'm thinking about them.
Yeah.
And that's really lonely. That's a really lonely kind of like sad place to be in as a leader, of just being like, I'm running. And then, you know, going like, no one's thinking about
my no one's handing me a bottle of water. There's no pit stop here. I'm just like running and dragging everyone along, which of course we know is like somewhat of a falsehood. Like obviously I am interested in the paradox that you just described about your passion for community and also knowing you're kind of a lone ranger, which to me a little bit describes visionary leadership. Like there has to be kind of a piece of that. So I do want to get to that in just a moment. But when you're in that place where you're like, hey, I'm running and no one's looking out for me, like what happens next for you inside of your mind or your heart?
You know, this time it was actually good in the sense that one, I recognize that that's not a truth. It's not that no one's looking out for me. I have incredible community. I have a lot of support in the exact way that I'm talking about. It's true. No one's looking out for me, but that's not the meta of my whole life. Like I'm deeply cared for and deeply held, but truly in the role of leadership and, you know, like with certain things that I'm trying to achieve, it is, there's no one above me that's being like, oh, I'm really like checking in on Liz and her, you know, career growth and mental health, like no one's doing that for me, you know, in this specific way. Now on a community level, I would not exist. Like I have an amazing support system of just humans that are friends, that are peer levels. And so one, I recognized, okay, that's really hyperbolic and it's not, you're not totally alone and you're not, you know, out here trying to make sure everything stays right for everybody else. And but literally no one's thinking about you or no one cares about you or no one's watching out for you. So number one, that's hyperbolic and that's not a truth. That's not a truth. There's an element of truth in there that's true for all leaders. So just kind of like, okay, acknowledge that, but then recognize that's not the whole reality. Two, I actually do feel like in some ways, I think the work that I have ahead of me right now, I have work to do on just like what are healthy boundaries and what are burdens for mine to carry, and versus when do I have to say, you have to do the best you can with what you have, but you're not in control of everyone's destiny. And you're not, there's so many problems in the world that are so much bigger than you are and things that are out of your control. And it's not on you to keep all of that going and spinning and make sure that, you know, it's working for everybody. You have to do what you can with what you have. And also, I'm not here yet. So I'm very much in the process. You can't do that to your own detriment. Like, it's just so dumb. I feel like such a basic beep for even saying it out loud, because it's like, duh, like, you know, all the dumb, like, put your own oxygen mask on. It's like, and I say it's dumb just because it's true. It's like, duh, we've heard that 1,000 times.
Right.
And it's true. Also, like, if I'm running myself into the ground, my effectiveness is going to be limited because I'm going to die.
Well, and I, you know, I, not to make it like super deep, but I actually think it is super deep, because I think it's this part of us that like wants immortality. Like we actually want to believe that we're not limited and that we don't have like a limited capacity. We're not like fragile, finite beings, because I think when we vision and when we lead, we're actually tapping into like the divine nature in all of us. Like we're tapping into the creativity that God's given us, but then we hit this wall of like, but this is my ceiling, or like I'm exhausted, or I have children to raise, or someone's got to buy groceries. Like you just, and for me, like, yes, it is like it is basic. It is oxygen mask, but it is also this like huge surrender and acceptance to like, man, I am just one human being. Like I can't solve all these problems, and I have to reconcile that I can solve the problems I've been given. Mm-hmm. To the extent that I can only, and not these other things. So even when I listen to you, I'm like, Liz is so cool. Like Liz is changing the world, almost to the detriment, as if like there aren't like a million other Liz's in the world in their own capacity, in their own way, changing the world in the places that they are, which I know is really the basis of your vision for Seiko. So I do like, can you like just bring us back and just tell us for Seiko, what was true before it even became a company that is still true today?
Oh my God.
When you think about it.
That every person on planet Earth is made in the image of God. So the belief in the Imago Dei, and deserves to be treated with dignity and respect. That was the heart of like, hey, if you're, you know, a wicked smart female scholar, but you happen to be born into poverty in rural war-torn Uganda, like you deserve dignity and respect. And I want to build a world where you have an opportunity to thrive. If you are a single mom of three in India working in the global supply chain where less than 2% of people earn a living wage working 14 hours, 15 hours, 16 hours a day to make our stuff, your dignity and your respect and your well-being is so much more important than me getting a tank top for $8.99. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's what started Seiko. Like it's that belief. And that is the truest. If you ask me today, what is Seiko about? I would literally answer that question verbatim to how I would have answered it 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's what we're up to, and our modalities and what products we sell, and our, you know, maybe to some degree model has definitely, I mean, our model has shifted significantly about 5 years ago when we stopped selling wholesale and we switched to a social selling model. And so now our products are sold through women here in the US who earn a commission off of their sales versus like selling them, you know, having sales reps that then sell them to a store, and those sales reps are the ones getting the commission. And even that switch was very much so out of that belief of like, there were just so many women specifically that I met on my own journey who were like, Seiko's awesome. What you've built is awesome. How can I be a part of it? And I was like, you can buy more things. Like, I didn't have a great pathway other than be my customer. And so we built, we call them the Seiko Fellows. We built this social selling channel and platform and program to enable other folks to basically fuse their vocation, their income opportunity with impact and with purpose and passion. Because I met so many people, whether they were in jobs that they hated, that were just like, I don't get it. I don't see a bigger purpose for what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I have to feed my family, and I have a job is the reality for most of us. And I wish that what I did to make a living could be more aligned with what I, and I think I realized, you know, it's like I started Seiko when I was 22, 21. I don't know. I've never known anything different. I had, I worked for 2 months at a communications firm before I quit to move to Uganda. So I've never known my vocation isn't also this thing that I deeply believe in, and just recognizing like, oh my gosh, so many people don't have that.
Yeah.
Almost feeling like I want to share that. Like I didn't even realize it, but I think I hacked the system because the way that I earn a living in the world is also the thing that I is out of a deep belief and conviction that I have that I get to live out. It feels like it would be really selfish to not figure out a way to let other people in on that. And so we made a pretty big business transition and shift 5 years ago to do that. But even then, that same phrase of just like everybody deserves to be treated with dignity and deserves the opportunity to thrive, because I'm just as passionate now about the stories of transformation that we see in our community here in the US as I am, with our global team abroad, right? Where it's just like women who had a baby and went through severe postpartum depression, and fell out of community and were believing lies that they were worthless and that they didn't have a purpose and that nobody loved them, and are now leaders of leaders in our community and have best friends and are living this life of just like adventure and connection. And they, you know, wake up every day and they're doing work that they believe in. Not that it's not hard a lot of times, because work is called work because it's work. But that there's like alignment in that, and seeing those like stories of transformation now, not just like in Uganda or India or Peru or Ethiopia, but here at home is like so deeply energizing to me. But it's all out of that belief of just like everybody deserves to be treated with dignity and respect and the opportunity to work and to thrive.
I have so many questions. So quick question. Is that something that just bubbled up in you? Did that come out of a process, or do you feel like truly like God gave you a dream and laid it on your heart, and that's how Seiko was born?
I think it's like, you know, when something is just so, I'm like confused. I think I'm just like, no, it's just there. And like, is it there for everybody? Like, it's so innate to me. And I recognize this is where you like, you know, you have your own perspective and you assume everybody else is coming out of a similar perspective. But for me, it just kind of honestly feels like a duh.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, well, I always say to people when I talk about calling, most of us think it's like, duh, like whatever the thing is that God has really gifted us to do, we almost will minimize it because we just assume it's like not like when people are like, of course I could throw a baby shower for 30. Duh. Like they just like, don't, or like
just hearing that heart palpitation.
Yeah, I know. Like, of course I can make my home beautiful. Of course I can like build this spreadsheet that has like a thing in it where a table connects to another. People start building spreadsheets and I'm like, this is not normal. Like that is to you. That is for you. That is who you've been made to be. It is not who everyone is. But I do love that because it does, I think, create some freedom. Like if you're listening or watching and you're like, I'm not that person. Well, we don't need everybody to be that person. Like a lot of us need to follow that person and be grateful that you have it. And Liz, I just want to point out, I know you know this, but the fact that you have this like foundational vision sort of value statement that really has nothing to do with the form and function, like the form and function can totally change as you've, you know, I know you pivoted during COVID. I know you've got this big project coming up. You started this social share, like the freedom for people to know, like it's worth discovering what that foundational kind of set of vision and values is for you personally or for your company, because that gives you the flexibility to be agile and you're not so like stuck in one way of doing things. You can start to see many, many ways, you know, that might be open to
but
you.
That why does anchor you so that you're not just like ping, 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 squirrel.
Exactly.
And I talk about this. I've got a chapter in my book. What's it called, Nicole? I don't know, because it feels like 10 years ago.
I know. It was like, didn't you write a book called Beginner's Pluck?
Did. And there's a chapter that has something to do with kind of the what versus the why. And really, like, I think it is so foundational as leaders that one, we know our why and we tap into it. And you can sit like, just like I was like 12 years ago, this is what it is today. It is so deeply embedded. And so everything, every opportunity, every challenge, everything that comes across my plate, it's like this, it's the North Star of just like, align with that why or does it not? Now the what we are doing, we are selling fashion products. We are selling fashion products through a social selling model and with a network of, you know, fair trade producers those are our what, and that is different than our why, right? Uh-huh. And so you have to know both, because the what is the thing that I really encourage people to say, be surprised by the what. Like, have an open hand. If you would have told me, I believed that statement that I shared with you when I was 20 years old before I started Seiko. I believed that thing deeply. And you could have paid me all the money in the world and said, hey, Liz, in 5 years, you're going to be running a fashion company. And I would have been like, like, not a chance. No interest in fashion, no interest in business. I'm going to go be a human rights journalist. Like, just like, you are so, 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 so off base with that. So I was very surprised by the what. My business is really a means. It started out as a means to an end for me. And like, this feels like the best way to solve this specific problem. And it really took time. I would say over time, I fell in love with aspects of the what.
Yeah.
But it's not like where I started. Like, I very much so started with the why and was like, okay, I don't really care how we solve this problem. Do we do it the nonprofit model? Do I start a chicken farm? Try that. Do I just try to, you know, sell these strappy sandals? Okay. And that was the thing that actually, like, you know, I obviously ended up pursuing. But it's like, hold on to your why for dear life and just white knuckle it out of that. But then the what, got to hold it in an open hand. And like, how is it going to evolve? How is it going to iterate? How are you going to, how is it going to continue to grow? How might it be something very different than what you originally set out to do?
Do you think that that gives you a different framework for failure?
Mm.
Do you think that deep connection to why lets the what be more, like, are you more open to fail? Like, tell us about failure. Cause I feel like every entrepreneur has a journey and a philosophy around failure that can help the rest of the people out there who maybe haven't risked everything or done these kinds of things in their life.
Yeah. If I'm being real, so this podcast, my emphatic answer is like, of course it does. Like, of course. I have so much more freedom and an ability to take risks and to pivot and to iterate, even at the, you know, with this thought of like, you never know, like, it's always hindsight is 2020, right? Of like, was that the great pivot that saved the company? Or was that like a really bad decision? You know, like, you don't know until you're actually through it. You're looking back on it and then telling the story of it. So I want to say and deeply believe that ideologically, yes, it really does inform my perspective on failure. In a lived reality, am I still really afraid of failure? And do I hold on to things too tightly? Also, yes.
Yeah.
But I think I have a healthier view on it and more freedom than I would without that framework.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Gosh, I love that. Okay. So got to circle back before we wrap up. So intrigued by calling yourself a Lone Ranger and telling us that like one of your most passionate values is community. Tell us a little bit about like how you've learned. I mean, how did you learn to value community and what, like, to use your phrase, lived reality, what is that lived reality for you coming out of COVID, divisiveness, distance, all the things that have impacted all of us?
Yeah. This is so interesting. I feel not confident I'll be able to articulate this well, only because I actually haven't explored this like dichotomy in myself of like the Lone Ranger and then the obsessive community member and creator. Where did my love for community come from? I don't know. I grew up without a lot of it.
Okay.
Like my,
that's usually a place where it comes from. I mean, you know, most of us develop great purpose out of pain. So
yeah. I didn't feel like really connected. Like I grew up in suburbia where we didn't really know our neighbors. I grew up without having, I knew people who had like family friends. And I was like, so intrigued by that. I'm like, what is like family friends? That just like, wasn't really like, I knew my mom had a best friend. And I think my dad had some people that he was friends with that I didn't, it was not community. And then I also wasn't super close to my extended family. They happened to be kind of close to each other, but we were the family that lived in not either of the places that the two families lived in. So I kind of just a little bit felt like a floater, like growing up. And still to this day, like I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and I feel fondly toward, I don't feel a sense of rootedness from like my people from where I came and this place, you know, it was, again, I think it's like, I grew up in a giant suburban neighborhood where people moved in and they moved out. And a lot of times you didn't, you know or talk to your neighbors. But I would say honestly from a pretty early age, and my family growing up was pretty unstable. I definitely remember being in like middle school and things at home feeling really dicey and not knowing where my footing was. And so I think being like, oh, if you want that, you might need to go out and find it other ways. And so from a really early age of just like, I was the girl, so fun. I was the girl in like middle school and high school that is like gung-ho on like, is that the gung-ho? Gung-ho? I don't even know.
Gung-ho. You got it, girl.
On like female community and just like, okay, you know, hoes before bros. I don't know if I can sit on this podcast.
You can say whatever you want, honestly.
But just, I instituted a rule in my friend group in high school that it was like, because I dated someone actually all through high school too. But I was like, Friday nights are date nights and Saturday nights are for the girls. And like, we have to protect this time and we have to prioritize each other in our relationships. And truth be told, two of those girls are actually still my core, like soul.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
Now. And that carried in through college where I was like, you know, did this thing. I was like Monday night roommate meetings. And it was just like every Monday night at 10 p.m. because, you know, we were in college. God bless us. I'm like in a REM cycle now by 10 p.m. of just like, we're going to come together and we're going to talk about everything that happened this week. And we are going to talk about what was hard. We're going to talk about what was ugly. We're going to ask for forgiveness for one another for the week because we're going to mess up. We're six women living in a house together. We're going to hurt each other's feelings. And we can either go inward in that and start telling ourselves stories about ourselves and each other. Or every single week we can come to the table and we can say, this feels really scary and stupid to say out loud, but that thing that you said the other night really hurt my feelings. Mm-hmm. And here's the story that I'm telling myself about it. And you know, when you're like 19, you see the transfer, you just like see things like melting, like in real time, just like anger, resentment, jealousy, insecurity, the power of saying these things out loud. Like I have goosebumps right now just being like, oh my God, like the melting of the kind of facade and having a group of people that can come together. There's just like a softness and vulnerability there. And what happens out of that is magic. Like these six women that I did those Monday night, it was just non-negotiable. I was like a little community Gestapo.
Tyrant.
you cannot miss a 10 p.m. meeting. This is a non-negotiable and probably really intense, but I actually deeply believe I think as a culture, just like, let it be organic and like chemistry and let it happen.
Yeah. Be in, be out. Like, don't be committed really to anything or anyone.
You like they're intense. Something's wrong with them. And I'm just like, fine, you can live your life like that because literally every single good thing in my life is a result of, at least in the beginning, like commitment, kind of intensity. It's not organic. It doesn't feel natural, but you show up and you put your butt in the seat. I don't care if it's writing a book, you get your butt out of bed every morning at 5 a.m. and you write 2,000 words and it doesn't matter if you feel like it or not. If it's marriage, it's like you freaking go and you schedule the date night and you do the thing and you have the hard conversation and you pursue relationship even when you don't feel in love, you don't even like that human at that moment, right? Like in friendship, like you show up every night, every Monday night at 10 p.m., whether you're tired, whether you feel like it or not. And eventually my experience has been an organicness, it comes. I've never done anything good in my life that felt easy in the beginning or like organic, or this is just like kind of the natural like next step. And so, you know, I believe that about community. It's like those six women that I lived with in college, all six of them still to this day, I mean, five Marco Polos a day. Like we are in it. It is just like sharing life, the highs, the lows, absolute transparency and authenticity. And so I don't even know what your original question was.
Well, it was about like being a Lone Ranger and wanting and desiring community. And like, I can't speak for you, but when I listen to you, it feels to me like maybe there's a part of you that like needs to be seen, needs to be like transparent, and that somehow that gives you this confidence to go back out into the world. And I think it's beautiful, because when we know that the people who really know us know what we really need and who we really are, then we can go out and like do the Lone Ranger thing, because we're not alone anymore. Like, we might be out on a scouting mission, but we're not alone anymore, you know?
Absolutely. 100%. I think about community almost like attachment parenting theory, mm-hmm. right? Like, the theory around forming a strong attachment with your kids isn't so that they need to be attached to you for forever. Right. It's actually that they have such a secure attachment in their identity, in who they are, in the solidness, in the consistency of your love, that actually creates the freedom for kids to then go run and to go be free and to be independent. And I honestly think we're all just children, and that community plays that role. That it's like, I almost feel like, because I have that attachment and that safe, these safe places where I'm seen, I'm known, I'm loved, I'm held, that yes, that allows me to take risks, to go out and to be the Lone Ranger and to do the thing. Because even when I'm alone, you know, it's like the amount of times in my life where it's like the joke is just like, I mean, my sister just checks on me on Find My Friends, and my friends want to buy me a sat phone because they're just like, you just go, you know. And not so much now that I have kids, but you know, in the first part of the first decade of being an adult, it would literally be like, I think that there's something I heard about that I got to go check out in Ethiopia. Hey, even my husband, like, well, where are you staying? Where are you going to be? How do I get a hold of you? I'm like, I don't pray. And I don't know. We both talk to the North Star. And when the stars align and we can talk, like, I don't know, if you don't hear from me in like 9 days, maybe sounds the alert, but like, definitely don't freak out if you don't hear from me in 4 or 5 days. Cause I'm in a country I've never been. I don't know where I'm staying. I don't even know how cell phones work there. So give me a couple days to get it figured out. It's kind of extreme, but I do believe that is that sense of freedom to go be the Lone Ranger and to take risks is totally like, is so influenced by that safety net and that sense of like tethering and connection to a place. And I'm deeply now rooted to a place. Like, I live in Portland, Oregon. My love and obsession with community has led me there. I live in a really, like, I call it an urban commune. We've got a growing group of friends that we like bought property together. We share property. We raise our kids together. We literally live in the middle of a city and shared property, and are just in it, like totally transparent, open door, committed community together. And that it's like having an extended family.
Yeah.
It's like there's in it's such a gift, and it provides so much. And I hope it's just not for me. Like, my hope for our community is that every single member of our community feels that freedom to go out and to become more of who they were truly created to be, and to take risks because they know, like, we got you.
Yeah.
If it all goes to crap, it's okay.
Yeah.
And you can't do that when it's just a nuclear family, right? There's an insane amount of pressure. You know, it's like, okay, maybe your husband has a dream on his heart and he wants to go out and start a business, and you're weighing the very real risk of like, but we've got 3 kids and we've got a mortgage and we have all this stuff to pay. And it's just like, and it's on us. It's on the two of us. We have to make it work. And all of a sudden you live in community and it's like, oh no, if worst case scenario happens, you've got 15 people
that
are going to figure out how to make it happen. And you will not fall through the cracks. You will not be out on the streets. Like, there is a net of people who are going like, go do the thing, go take the risk. Like, we'll cover for you in worst case.
Yeah. And I mean, I think about all the people out there that are feeling so lonely and so disconnected. And rather than like ask you that question, I'm just going to restate what I heard you say. Like, everyone, did you hear Liz say that she was super intense and she basically called people into an experience? And guys, if you're that person, when you're listening, you're the one who takes initiative. You're the one who can like kind of make things happen. Well, then make it happen. Like, it's, you can do that. And some folks who maybe are like, well, I'm a little more shy, I'm a little more introverted. Well, just take one step. Just ask one person to take a walk. Like, you can take one step toward someone, and we can all do this. I think there's a little bit of paralysis. Like, I'm waiting for someone else to solve this problem for me. And I'm like, we all have to kind of solve the problem together. So go ahead, like, invite them to your backyard, whatever that thing is.
You gotta go first. You can't wait to be the one that gets invited, it's so scary to go first because you're putting yourself out there. And you also have to know you will face rejection too.
Some people are not, they're not on
board. Every invite will get accepted. And frankly, not every friend or relationship that you pour into will end up being your soul people. We're going to disappoint each other. You will be deeply disappointed. But then, I mean, I think if we dig even a little bit deeper, it's like, okay, community is the safety net and this attachment that allows us to go out and take risks. Ultimately, for me, my belief is like, okay, if I'm truly tapped into my identity as a beloved child of the divine, that also gives me the freedom to go out and be rejected a few times.
Because
my ultimate worth doesn't lie in whether or not that person wants to hang out with me or be my best friend, right? That it's like,
so good. Okay.
So I can go out and I can take risks and I can, but yes, pursuit. We're just so, everybody wants to be nonchalant about everything and have it work. In our community, like of Seiko Fellows, we talk about this idea that one phrase that we use a lot is be chalant. Like, stop. Everybody's like, I mean, we could hang out or we could not. You could buy my product or you could not. Like, you could come to this event, but if it's a burden, like, no, don't even think twice about not. And it's just like, just stop it. Just stop it. What if we were a people that just said, this is what I want?
Yeah.
Please come be a part of it. Like, I need a friend. Like, can I come over? Can I serve you and invite you first? Like, this is the desire of my heart, is to build this business, to get this band up into the world, to be my art. Will you come to my gallery opening? And will you please bring three friends? It would mean the world to me. Stop being cool. We're not gonna build cool, meaningful, passionate lives if we just walk around being like, I mean, you can or you can't. That's fine.
And the, like the, like the side note, and then we'll wrap here. Like, people like to be needed. It's like, yes, you are taking a risk and you may risk rejection and they may not come. But like at the end of the day, human nature is like, I want you to say that you need me to do something. I want you to say that it means a lot that you come to my gallery opening. I don't want you to say you could come or you could not come. Like, you mean, because what that says, like the bubble above everyone's head is like, you mean very little to me.
Mm-hmm. And I'm fine with that.
It's not going to impact me or change anything about me if you come or not, which is patently untrue. It's not what we're actually experiencing. So yes, let's be chalant. I love it. Let's be chalant together. Okay. This is always our last question for our guest, Liz. It's been incredible. I feel like we could talk for hours, honestly, but I've like lots of other questions we didn't even get to, but we're going to pull it up, take it up here to this just extremely superficial level. Tell us like a product, an app, a thing, a show that's like changing your life right now. You're just loving it.
Gosh. Oh my gosh. I'm so bad at these things. Yeah. A show. Okay. A show. Here is something. As soon as you said this, I was like, oh my God, this is going
to
be like,
pop, you have to say it.
Relevancy. And then I'm going to just show I am an IQ of 3 on this level. And this answer is going to actually confirm it. You know what show is changing my life right now?
Love is Blind.
Seinfeld. Seinfeld just coming in hot, giving you something new, relevant.
Listen, I just watched a Seinfeld episode 3 days ago. I just watched the Levels episode with Kramer and I was like, I just need to watch this. Like, I know it's going to happen and I'm going to watch it.
So I did not, I was not a Seinfeld person, and I don't know how my husband and I got on it, but I've also been having like pretty severe insomnia. And so I've been getting like wickedly strict about my like bedtime routine. And it somehow started involving Jerry Seinfeld. And like, I'm sorry, but like weighted blanket, eye mask, and 30 minutes with Jerry Seinfeld. And I get lulled into, there is like a simplicity about it. I don't know what it is, but I like light. And now it's like Jerry Seinfeld is like my comfort blanket. So
I love it. I love it. Hey, you do what works for you. And I get it. Honestly, like in a world that's increasingly complicated and dark, it is so nice to be like, this is light. This is 22 minutes. This is going to make me laugh and I'm going to go right to sleep.
Follow me for new up and coming suggestions and technology on Instagram.
Guys, you do want to follow Liz, pick up her book, check out Seiko. Honestly, like don't check out Seiko unless you really want to be in it, and you should want to be in it because it's a great company that's doing great things and you're just going to get hooked. So I hope you have gifts to buy for yourself or for someone else because you're going to love it. So you guys check it out. Liz, thank you so much for your time and just your wisdom. I'm like, oh gosh, this has been so incredibly helpful. You just reignited just for me personally, just some of my deep values around community and vision and the why and how deeply we all need to remember that. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. This was such a blast. And I look forward to hopefully more in the future.
Absolutely.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Let's Be Real podcast. If you have a question for the show, you can send it to me at Nicole@NicoleEunice.com. And hey, if you're enjoying this, we'd love for you to like, subscribe, share it with your friends, pass it on, shout it from the rooftops, whatever you feel like doing, because the reality is, let's get as many people getting real as possible. Talk to you soon.